This is Selling the Truth, a podcast documentary brought to you by WF360 Productions.
You know, if you have game seven and you need to win game seven, you put your best pitcher out there, you put the best game plan out there, and once the game starts, you just let it fly.
We're chronicling what some called an impossible mission. Led by Gary Liu, it involves a team of passionate people attempting to transform Hong Kong's flagship newspaper, the South China Morning Post, into a digital media powerhouse. And they've got an audacious ultimate goal: to lead the conversation about China globally, starting with the United States. We don't yet know where this story will end. In episode one, we talked of the truckloads of hurdles to jump over or skirt around before success can be defined, let alone named. It all sounded pretty, well, impossible. In episode two, we got a glimpse of the positive side, starting with Gary Liu, who took over as CEO in January 2017. You heard his thinking about how the journalism business has to fundamentally change in light of major shifts in the way news is discovered and consumed. He described the first steps, beginning with the human side, his key staff, and the company's working culture, and he hinted about tech products they plan to launch. In this episode, we'll be asking the question, who were the people who agreed to join this company halfway around the world so they could be part of a venture with no clear route to success? In the next episode, we'll switch to the editorial side, but for now, what was it Gary's tech team had latched onto with such fervor, and what was it like to be part of this, as one described it, the Herculean task? Remember Shackleton's expedition to the Antarctic in the early 1900s? He posted an ad saying, men wanted for hazardous journey to the South Pole, small wages, bitter cold, long months of complete darkness, constant danger. Okay, this is not that, but still, it's a daunting enterprise. I'm your host, Susan Bird, and this is Selling the Truth, Episode 3, Playing Game 7. Some of Gary's team members believed so strongly they had to take up this challenge, they reminded me of that song in the Broadway hit Hamilton about not throwing away your shot. They clearly felt they had a shot at winning the business transformation lottery. Well, maybe lottery is not the right word, because that implies that success would depend on luck. While they'd welcome luck, they knew the outcome would depend on overcoming an Everest of challenges. Yet they were pretty confident. In the years before coming to Hong Kong, Gary had made and kept a circle of friends, fellow techies, and that's where he went first to find the people he could trust to build world-class tech capability at the SEMP. We'll start with Jesse Ma, who was head of partnerships then. Here's his take on this endeavor.
It's a huge mountain to climb, but man, when we get to the top of it, it's going to be an incredible view.
Notice he didn't say, if we get there. So let me tell you a little bit more about him. Jesse speaks directly. He should. He's a lawyer. When he graduated from law school, rather than going in-house for a large bank, he said, nah, I'd rather take my chances going to a fast-growing media company. So he was Gawker's first in-house counsel. And then he did the same thing at Upworthy. And then Jesse heard from Gary Liu. They'd met in Michigan when Gary was on his first post-college job with Google, and kept in touch and talked of someday working together. Now, years later, Gary presented an opportunity to make that talk real.
And he was like, looking to target the audience of people interested in China. And he told me about the mission to lead the global conversation on China, and that they're making a big bet that the audience here in the United States and globally will grow as China grows as an economy, as a world power. Gary is not just trying to improve it. He's leading a revolutionary change within this company. It's a huge bet and it's a huge risk, but you know, without great risk, you don't get a high reward.
It was exactly what he was looking for. To quote a Chinese proverb, pearls don't lie on the seashore. If you want one, you must dive for it.
This is going to be not easy, but that's sort of the environment I've always thrived in.
So what role was Jesse expected to play?
I was keyed in to all the negotiations and the deal terms and the structures of partnerships in my previous companies. And so I thought it would be a really cool jump for me to go from legal to corporate development.
So basically you're now a sales guy. Deal-making guy.
Actually, you know, I'm a deal-making guy. Okay. I would say I'm not a salesperson because my role is not revenue-driven. My primary focus is to position the South China Morning Post and establish relationships with major partners and publishers so that as demand increases, we are positioned well and have established networks where we can grow our audience and reach the people that we need to.
A real distribution system.
Looking forward, he reflected on the international upheaval represented by the Trump presidency on the one hand, and on the other, the implacable rising power of the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party. News media in Hong Kong was right in the middle of this storm. Yet clearly for Jesse Ma, the SEMP venture was a ride he really wanted to take.
I've always been at companies where I truly believe in the mission and the vision of the company. And with that South China Morning Post, this mission to tell and lead the conversation on China is so important in a time where there's huge economic shifts happening in the world. The U.S. is going through its own turmoil with this administration. It's very clear. Its identity on sort of the world stage is changing. And China is going through sort of that identity shift too, sort of rebranding on how they position themselves and how they identify in the world stage. And they've had consistent growth over the years, and it only looks like it's going to keep going. And everybody's sort of betting on that, at least within our company and our parent company. And I think it's a good bet. So we'll see what happens. In the digital media space, it's all about the people, and then it's all about your mission. So unless you have both of those things, it doesn't really work out. And so, you know, the mission thing, I think we've sorted out what we're trying to do. Now comes hiring the right people to execute and deliver on that mission.
Another recruit to the SEMP venture you need to meet is Malcolm Ong, a serious techie with a reputation for not just meeting but beating deadlines, soft-spoken in a way that makes you confident that he really knows his stuff. Born in Jakarta, he speaks English and Indonesian. His family moved to L.A. when he was young, and he'd been there ever since until Gary came calling. He has impressive tech chops, IBM, Razorfish, his own startup companies. He was involved in South by Southwest, and more recently he had a big job at Lyft, responsible for product initiatives, and he holds several patents. In Hong Kong, I heard Malcolm give a presentation on AI to journalists from other local publications, and I saw firsthand he's a pro. And he, too, had known Gary for years. The seed of collaboration was sown early. Trust and friendship played an important part, it seems, in Malcolm's willingness to take on the risks this project entailed.
Gary and I as well, including Jesse, have always joked around that we'd start a company together someday. So I think all of those combined was kind of the reason why this was really, really interesting and compelling. And the fact that I've always wanted to try Asia.
Malcolm plays a critical role in Gary's plan.
My organization is a product organization, which includes product management, includes engineering, includes design, and technically includes partnerships as well, where Jesse plays. So those four verticals or functions. And we are in charge of working on every single external facing product, whether that be the website, whether that be the apps, and all the content products that we're releasing soon. But beyond web and beyond mobile, it's also everywhere else that our users and our customers and readers will consume our content, whether that be on Facebook, Google, YouTube, Snapchat, Instagram. If we ever get into audio and podcasts and things like that, those will all be under our helm.
Malcolm was clear-eyed about the competitions SEMP faced from the big boys like the Washington Post. After Jeff Bezos bought the Post, the paper doubled its web traffic in 3 years. The Post's former publisher, Donald Graham, explained in a CNN interview that Bezos brought masses of technological talent. By September 2017, it had crossed the million mark for paid digital-only subscribers, a number that continues to grow rapidly. What's more, the Post hasn't simply grown in influence. It has also become profitable. According to Graham, it was not Bezos' talent for driving fast results that made the difference. It was his extreme long-term mindedness.
Ever since Bezos took over, they've gotten reinvigorated and much more tech savvy and definitely had the resources to do so. They've grown in size, they've grown in terms of knowledge, in terms of capabilities, and they have other newspapers being their customers. So I would say that, yeah, Washington Post is leading the charge of transformation from non-tech savvy old newspaper traditional models to more of a tech company that happens to be a newspaper that happens to be in this industry.
What about the Times? Where do they stand on all this?
I think the Times, even before the Washington Post, the Times has definitely been one of the first to adapt to this change, right, that technology and the internet has brought to the industry. They released this new manifesto of how they need to change everything about how they used to do things, because if they didn't, then they can never survive.
I'd heard Jeff Bezos respond when asked if 10 years from now the Washington Post would still be printing newspapers. Oh, we'll probably always be publishing a paper, he said. But I think it's kind of like owning a horse. You don't own a horse anymore for transportation. You own it because it's a beautiful thing. He said, I can imagine people walking into a house someday and saying, oh, a newspaper.
I like that analogy because it reminds me of the music industry where you can equate that to, you know, owning an actual record. Or you can look at the transportation industry and say, 10 years from now, owning a car will be like owning a horse, right? Maybe the only cars that exist are the ones that people like having as a hobby or want to race on a track simply because they actually like driving. But 80, 90% of the cars out there are going to be autonomous.
The Washington Post provided a trailblazing example for the Alibaba-owned SEMP. Bezos' strategy was to change the outlook of the paper from local to national, even global, and from print to digital media. Given those parallels, I wondered if there were other corporate partners the SEMP hoped to lure in. Malcolm avoided specifics.
It's most likely going to be a strong brand that the U.S. market already resonates with, as opposed to some of our traditional clients have been very focused on the Hong Kong market. And so a U.S. audience wouldn't necessarily care about those brands. Yeah.
So we turn to the other sizable elephant in the room. What were his comments regarding censorship in China?
I don't think I'm worried about China, per se, in terms of what we're trying to accomplish. China is the central topic of what we're trying to push through. But if anything, they are the fuel behind this, right? Take the flip side. If China was not as important as it is today, then certainly none of the stories that we're telling is going to be important. So if anything, the opposite is happening. China is accelerating, especially after everything that's happening with Trump, right? And so that actually gives us more fuel and more things to talk about, and people are even more interested.
But there is this sense on a lot of people's part, and with good reason, that China censorship has made it tougher and tougher to get real information. Mm. And if you're going to lead the conversation about China, that means you can't just sidestep the difficult stuff.
Given all that has erupted in Hong Kong, Malcolm's answer was both hopeful but prophetic.
We haven't seen that yet. You know, who knows if that's going to happen 3-5 years from now. But I'm confident that we won't run into that issue. When you look at someone like Jack, he wants more people to learn about China, to care about China, and actually see the real story. Because if the story that's coming out about China is super censored, then people are not even going to consume it. They're not even going to trust it. Or the flip side, if the only stories that people are consuming are coming from very biased lenses, then you're still not telling the true story. And so if I want outsiders to learn more about my country, it's in their best interest to tell that story, because otherwise people are not going to care. And so you need this outlet. And this is why journalism is important, right? We need to tell these stories.
Is Malcolm right? Editorial policy on the SEMP website is unequivocal. Gary Liu declares the newspaper's editorial integrity and convictions are to be sacrosanct. Quote, I think that under any ownership model, journalists have an accountability to the discovery and dissemination of truth. What I see day in and day out in the South China Morning Post newsroom is journalists fighting for the truth. Unquote. We'll be right back. So how far does this vision spread? Let's hear some other voices. Here's Wan Kim. Wan is bright-eyed behind hipster glasses, a smiler, highly enthusiastic, just the kind of guy you need to gin up consumer interest. He, too, has known Gary for years. In fact, when Gary was leading Digg, he wooed Wan away from a creative agency to lead Digg's marketing team. And then Gary left Digg for the SEMP, and in short order, he had an even more exciting career suggestion for Wan.
He kind of dropped it on me, and the way that Gary does, he's an amazing salesman. He can sell water to fish. He said, hey, there's a real strong culture that I'm trying to build here at SEMP to expand internationally, to become the global leader in bringing China and Asian news to the world. And North America and U.S. especially is a market that we need to penetrate, and I think you'd be perfect for it. And soon enough, there was an opportunity for me representing an amazing brand and working for Gary, who I already know from my time at Digg and even before that, who's an amazing leader in person. So it was kind of a no-brainer.
Wan's job was to shape the way the SEMP delivered content for a myriad of users.
My role is to be able to articulate that in a way that the mass consumer, not only just the China watchers and the business elite, but even beyond that, people who are world consumers, people who want to be around the water cooler and the coffee bar talking about news that matters, who maybe have 20, 30 minutes of their day in a global citizen. How do we deliver that in a way that is compelling, in a way that's shareable, in a way that's engaging? And that is going to be my role, whether it's through pulling different levers of social media, pulling different levers of platforms like even podcast or even paid media, or all the way to all the owned media that we have and organic. All of those are levers that we pull so that it shares this message of not only SEMP is an important brand, but we also have important content to share.
Wan's team conducted focus groups and liked what they heard. I asked, who did they sample and what did they discover?
They were all college graduates, young to even 65, and all of them across the board were up to date, and they read a lot of different content from all over the place. Yet, they were still looking for a trusted source for China and Asian news. They'll read something from Quartz, something from Economist, something from SubChina, and they were like, it would be cool if we could get something that would deliver economic, political, tech, culture, and all these things together and put it into one place. And there was an appetite for it. That was really cool. My job is to make sure that the man or woman who's walking across New York City wanting to know news coming from China will trust SEMP in the next year or so.
So who would be your ideal partner?
A big fish for us would be Facebook. We already know that Mark Zuckerberg understands the importance of not only the world power of China, but the opportunity to fulfill his vision that the whole world would be a sharing and more human community. China has to be involved in that conversation. And Zuckerberg has done a lot, not only learning Mandarin, but going there on a couple of visits, a very presidential-like in the way he's operated and diplomatically with China. We think if Facebook is looking for a partner that can really tell a story and introduce this larger world that lives in Facebook, 2 billion and counting right now of active users, that SEMP could play a critical role in that. And so that would be a huge get for us. Thinking of others like NPR, who speaks to a lot of folks who are thinking about being a global citizen and understanding news outside of just their local city. I think Apple News and Vice and even Quartz, because Quartz has a real strong international flavor to it. Those would be great with us. And then even when we think about events where they highlight innovation and even new products and new way of thinking, like South by Southwest and CES, and then obviously universities where they're kind of on the forefront of thinking differently and having speaker series or panel discussions all around Asia and China and digital innovation. I mean, those would be all ones that we would love to be a part of going into this new year.
So if you had to be a betting man right now, is this whole transformation a sure thing?
I played a lot of sports. And if you have game seven and you need to win game seven, you put your best pitcher out there, you put the best game plan out there, and once the game starts, you just let it fly. And we have all of our bullpen ready to go. We have the best lineup we can think of. And, you know, everyone here has played baseball before. And after that, you just play ball, have fun, and let the ball bounce as it goes. And I think, as it says, you know, hopefully we'll come out with a W, a win.
So for Juan, it was game on. Now meet Corey Lee, who headed the data and analytics team when we talked. He came with serious tech chops from work at Squarespace, AppNexus, Google, and more. He's an American, proud of his Chinese ancestry. It turned out that he'd spent a year with a program called Search for Roots to learn more about his heritage. He combines wicked smarts with a charming, even sentimental attachment to places and people. On his blog, for example, he talks about moving from New York to Hong Kong, and he said, "While I'm excited for the new opportunity and working in Asia, I'm also anxious about the unknown and saddened to leave this town that has become even more like home." Corey, too, had known Gary from Google days.
We had worked together at Google a number of years ago together on a project, and we'd moved to New York around the same time as well. So we just happened to keep in touch over the years. So that's how we connected initially and then reconnected. And have another chance to work together now.
He's got a big job, and he loves it. He's got two objectives.
One is to provide insights and recommendations to the business units across the organization to enable them to be equipped and empowered with the data and the metrics that they need to run their organizations on a day-to-day basis. The old decision-making model, because of the lack of access to data, was largely based on gut decisions, right? Like, I feel like this is the way we should go, so let's go with that. And what we're trying to transform is shifting that into a mindset of, let's see what the data says. Let's see what our past performance has shown. Let's see if this methodology, this strategy is working, and then move from there. Look at the data. If the data validates the decision, then go ahead. Data-informed decision-making might be a better way to phrase it. And we have people with decades of experience here. So sometimes a blend of gut and data is a healthy mix, right? We need both.
Here's the second objective.
There's an external component as well. We also have to provide thought leadership in the space. Hong Kong is a little bit behind, frankly, in the data space as well as the overall technology space. Programmatic advertising is still kind of an up-and-coming conversation where it's been in existence in the U.S. for a long time now. So Hong Kong has a bit of catching up to do. So I think we're hoping to lead the conversation within that ecosystem as well.
Corey didn't talk about risks or making bets. For him, it was primarily a matter of design thinking.
There's actually hundreds of ways that things could go wrong. I think we just have to try. And if something doesn't work, we have to adjust quickly, you know, acknowledge, embrace that failure, but also learn from it and move on. Coming from a startup context myself, I apply the notion of failing fast to this context also. So, you know, wherein we can experiment, try different things, and then if they don't work, pivot, change, move on, and then try something else. The faster and the more agile we can do that.
Now, here's Ben Abbotts. He's a Brit who has lived in Hong Kong since he was four, educated in the UK, and he's been in the digital world ever since college. He's got a positive energy about him, really ready to engage. Not one of the newcomers, Ben has been at the SEMP for a decade, and he was their director of digital product development. He was psyched. He told me he's been waiting for this moment for 10 years.
I always felt we could actually potentially one day rub shoulders with those big guys. So I've always thought of SEMP as the opportunity that it could be something amazing. So for me, it's unbelievably exciting to finally be a part of an SEMP that is striving to become the company that many of us think that it really could be.
I asked him what he thought when he'd heard Alibaba had bought the company.
Tremendously exciting. Alibaba coming in with fresh thinking and obviously the financial muscle to be able to do something interesting. And it just felt very Amazon, WashPost, Bezos to me. So I was super excited about that.
So then they tell you that there's this young American who's showing up. What'd you think about that?
I was even more excited about that. Bringing in someone as young and as digitally influential as Gary is with his background, you know, Dig and Spotify, it just felt like it was going to be a completely different direction and really allow us to move forward with conviction and just with a lot of momentum, I felt. It's amazing, amazing.
So like a domino effect, Ben's contagious enthusiasm spread to his good friend Matt Booth, a highly respected video guru at CNN where he'd been for 17 years. Highly knowledgeable about all things video and responsible for CNN International's video operations all over Asia and the Middle East, Matt joined the SEMP in August 2017 to take over video operations.
Colleagues at CNN who had formerly worked for the Post told me that there were interesting things afoot. And one of my very good friends works for the design team here, Ben Abbotts. He's a veteran. So he's seen it through some challenging times, some times of opportunity, and also the possibilities that are presented by the new owners.
It hadn't been easy for Matt to leave CNN.
But I'll be honest, it was a wrench. It was definitely a wrench. But Western media is kind of retreating from Asia, certainly American media. They're obsessed with Trump at the moment. And to be in the CNN newsroom here, which is full of wonderful people, dedicated professionals, the best in the business, and to have them assigned to covering the latest Trump tweet every day, it's kind of dispiriting. And to get the opportunity to build something new, innovative, exciting, was too good an opportunity to pass up.
Once again, risk and opportunity ran together. Leaving a safe environment, yes. But Matt was to oversee construction of a world-class video studio in the brand new SEMP offices, still under construction then. Matt had big plans for what would be produced in that studio for global consumption. And reports suggest that the team he built has been delivering. In 3 years, according to journalism.co.uk, SEMP grew its YouTube subscribers from 27,000 to 1.45 million. And Matt's team expanded from 4 to 5 to around 25, including freelancers. Since focusing their video strategy, they produced between 7 and 15 videos a day. The result, 970 million views in this same period. These stats give a brief glimpse into the future while we explore the foundations of this project, and particularly the tech architects Gary was drawing together at the beginning. You'll meet more of them in future episodes, but for now, let's see if these tech honchos agreed on the nature of success. Juan Kim had said it was a matter of securing people's trust in the SEMP and its content. I went back to Jesse Ma and I asked him what, in, say, 3 or 4 years, he wanted people in the USA to be saying about the SEMP. You know, like, how would they say it? Oh, yeah, that's the whatever.
How I would see success is that people are like, oh, yeah, I read this story on the South China Morning Post, or they provided this perspective or insight into China. That would be success to me. It's not actually getting 200 million people to read. I mean, that would be great. Don't get me wrong. But the fact that people are actually engaging with China in terms of their knowledge and understanding of the culture and economically speaking in a business capacity, that they're engaging with that type of content and they want to go to the South China Morning Post for that content, that would be the success.
So it's become the source.
It has become the source and it's become the place where people go to understand China.
In other words, like Juan Kim, it's not just numbers of readers, but integrity and reputation that they were looking to recreate. In Corey Lee's case, while agreeing the SEMP should be a trusted source, for him it was critical that the SEMP provide an alternative to the view of China that Western sources typically produced.
I'd love to see the SEMP become a household name globally. So to become a media brand that's as well known as the BBC or the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, for it to have the recognition and the weight of those media companies and the degree of influence. The Western media today doesn't provide a holistic view of what China has to offer, and the SEMP is very uniquely positioned to do that.
In the light of what happened, it was no surprise to hear Matt Booth's plan.
I want to see video in all top five of our stories every single day. I want to see us doing more in-depth, long-form, documentary-style, web-length documentary-style programming. I want us to see us do more social video, and I don't mean social media video. I mean video about social issues, about people. I want to see our style as instantly recognizable as from the South China Morning Post. I want to build our brand so that it's something, if you see certain color flashes or the way a name comes up, you know, oh, that's the South China Morning Post.
So these guys were raring to go. And yet, this would be no walk in the park. What could realistically be achieved by this positive team? Could their commitment, a dose of good luck and plenty of new digital products, could they all do the trick in jumpstarting serious engagement of people outside Hong Kong, especially in the U.S.? In episode 4, we'll hear from the editorial folks, the journalists who had to come up with the content that everyone was hoping these planned products would deliver in innovative ways to knock the socks off a global audience. To be able to do that with credibility, the newsroom would have to transition their 114-year-old journalistic model into the new digital space. No small order. Let's see if the newsroom is playing Game 7, too. Join us for Selling the Truth's Episode 4, Breaking News. Thank you for listening. Selling the Truth is a WF360 production, produced by Susan Bird with help from Lori Kutz, fact-checking by Laura Kim, and sound editing from Transition Productions. Deep thanks to the SEMP employees, including tech and digital team members, reporters, and other staffers, and the many other individuals around the world who shared their candid responses to my many questions. Special thanks to Gary Liu, SEMP's CEO, for generously spending hours in conversation with me about his unique perspective on this story with worldwide significance. You can find links to more information, including supporting articles, in our show notes and on our website at WF360Productions.com. If you enjoyed this episode of Selling the Truth, tell your friends and give us a favorable review and subscribe or follow us on your favorite listening app. Your feedback will help other people discover this important conversation about journalism, news, and the truth. How we search for it, how we access it, how we consume it, and in the end, who we choose to trust to deliver it.